We're very excited here to have Mark Storing, the CEO of Xcel Energy Wisconsin and Michigan here, and I'm going to move over to have a conversation with Mark here as we proceed. So please, everyone, welcome Mark. Can you still hear me? Okay. Well, welcome, Mark. Thank you so much for coming to the Renewable Energy Summit.
Thank you, Tyler. I appreciate the invitation.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about your background, Mark, where you come from, where you started, and how you ended up with Xcel Energy.
Certainly. So I'm a product of the Midwest. I grew up in the Midwest. I know we're sitting in the heart of Wisconsin, but I went to undergraduate at Iowa State University. Finance major. I got my graduate degree, my MBA in finance from the University of Minnesota at the Carlson School. I actually started my career not in the utility sector. I started my career in the semiconductor group in Dallas, Texas with Texas Instruments. And after a number of years there, went to join what was at the time Northern States Power Company. My friends in Dallas said, you know, you're not going to be very excited in that utility industry that's slow moving, and I knew it would be something different, but it's been a terrific change, a terrific transition. So almost 30 years with what now is Xcel Energy. I've spent the last eight in Eau Claire, leading our Wisconsin operation. Our operating company in Wisconsin is responsible for Wisconsin and Michigan. Tyler asked me to share one of the things that I thought was kind of a neater part of the career along the way was way back in the 90s, I was involved in the initial stages of our renewable energy strategy as part of my business development responsibilities, and was actually responsible for building the first set of owned wind farms that we had in the company. And now with 6,700 megawatts of wind on the system, heading to five digits, it seems like a long time ago, but a great experience. And I remember the early days of wind, trying to decide, you know, could we pull this off? Could we integrate the intermittents? Could we convince our energy supply team that this was something that we wanted to do and we could do, and feel good about being at the early stages of that.
Oh, that's amazing. So Xcel Energy has had a really long history with renewable energy, and we're really lucky to have Mark, who was part of that at the beginning and now working up to the executive level. Tell us a little bit more about Xcel Energy's history of clean energy leadership, picking up kind of on that first one.
Yeah.
Where have you gone since then?
You bet. So that was a while back. What's really happened in terms of our good work in progress, and I'm really proud of it, is what's really happened in the last decade or so. So really a national leadership position on emission reduction, carbon reduction. We've had some ambitious goals. Our first goal was trying to reduce carbon by 35% by 2020. We actually did that sometime back in 2017. But at the time, it seemed like a really ambitious goal. We're at 35% or a little better today. A decade plus of integrating renewables in the system, wind and solar, other renewable energy, obviously a long history of hydro in Wisconsin as one of the Midwest's largest hydro producers. But at the same time, a nation-leading portfolio of energy efficiency products. I think we've got 150-some energy efficiency programs. That's important when you're trying to do what we're trying to do. And then also a existing and an emerging portfolio of renewable energy products and services, some that we're really excited about, some I suspect we'll talk about. So all in all, just to put that in a sense of where we're at, some people put it in a national or federal standpoint, so we're way beyond what would have been required under the Paris Climate Accord. We're way beyond what would have been required under the Clean Power Act had that gone forward. And I'm really proud to say if you're a customer of Xcel Energy in Wisconsin today, 29% of your energy comes from renewable energy sources, and 58% of that energy comes from carbon-free sources. So we've got a good start, and we're accelerating that every day.
And I think we'll talk a lot about renewable energy from here on out, but before we dive into all those details, tell us what else is going on. What the broader utility perspective, what are the things that are important to Xcel Energy? What are your priorities?
Yeah, so in recent years, we've really simplified our strategic priorities to three.
Okay.
The first one is we want to lead the clean energy transition, and that might seem very broad, and it's intentionally broad. That's beyond our company. We think there's a lot of opportunities to do that. I think we'll talk about our renewable and carbon goals in a moment. but lead that renewable energy transition, do it at the speed of value, do it reliably, do it affordably. The second is to keep bills low. The first doesn't happen unless you're able to do that. So we've got we've got a good track record of doing that with the progress we've made, but you have to do that. You've got to keep bills low, flat. You'd like to have them decline, at least stay below the rate of inflation on the high end, and we've been successful at doing that. The third is to enhance the customer experience, and there's a lot of ways we're doing that with digitization and apps and outage management, that type of thing. But in terms of the discussion today, it's to give our customers not only those energy efficiency products, the rebates that can go with improving their energy usage, but also those renewable energy products and services, an increasing part of enhancing the customer experience to get to satisfied customers.
Wonderful. I think most folks are aware of it. One of the reasons that we're so excited to have Mark here is because Xcel Energy made really a groundbreaking, an industry-leading commitment a month ago or so. And so why don't you tell us about that commitment related to carbon reduction?
Yeah, so our goal is bold, and our goal is more ambitious than anybody else's is in the industry. So I talked about the first goal of trying to get to 35% carbon reduction by 2020. The current goal had been to do that by decrease carbon by 60% by 2030. Mm-hmm. Last month we announced that we're going to move even faster. We're going to decrease our carbon by 80% by 2030. And for Wisconsin, it's actually a little bit higher than that because of our generation portfolio mix. It's actually 85% in Wisconsin. We think we got a pretty good line of sight to do that with existing technologies. We've got a lot of projects in progress. We've got already the 6,700 megawatts of wind, but we've got 12 more wind projects in seven states on that way to getting to somewhere around 10,000 megawatts of wind. But that's a big part of it. But then we're going way beyond that as well. We've set sights on 2050. Even though we think we can get to 2030 with existing technologies, our existing path, our coal retirements, we'd really like to get to 2050 and have provide our customers with zero carbon electricity. Now, we haven't got that all sorted out yet. We think to get to 2030 and the 80% reduction, you probably have to have somewhere around 60% renewables on the system, so it'll be our predominant energy supply mix. To get to 100, we're not really sure how we get there yet. We're going to need a technology assist. There are some things that we'll probably need that aren't economically viable or commercially viable today. That does not scare us. We're willing to bet on technology. We want to put the stake in the ground early. We want to start working with our customers, our policymakers, our regulators. We want to incent R&D on technologies that can get us there and find a way to get to that by 2050 and hopefully even sooner.
Yeah, we'll come back to that and talk about what some of those technologies might be that would enable a utility to get to 100%. But there are customers and communities that are saying 100% renewable energy and a distinguishment from carbon-free. So tell us a little bit about renewable energy versus carbon-free and sort of why did you choose a goal focused on carbon?
Right, it's a very good question, Tyler. So first, I applaud our customers and communities who have ambitious renewable goals and want to be 100% renewable or want to be more sustainable or carbon free. I think those are terrific goals. The good news is if you're a customer or a community, you can achieve that. You can find a way to do that today. When you're in our situation where you're operating the grid and integrating those renewables and providing 99.9% reliability and doing that affordably, there are some practical challenges that poses. Mm-hmm. So we've looked at this very carefully because if we could do it economically, we'd like to do that. Now, scientists would tell you, our engineers would tell you, it is technically feasible. You can find a way to do that technology-wise, but I said there's some practical challenges, and our engineers have looked at this. We've engaged academia. I saw a study from MIT just 2 weeks ago on this very question. So there seems to be a general consensus that if you were to make the entire grid renewable, you'd probably have to have a renewables overbuild of 3 to 5 times whatever the peak demand was That would obviously come at a pretty significant cost. You'd definitely need more transmission to move that renewable energy. You would have a declining value of capacity value and fuel savings value as you added more renewables to the mix, adding to the challenge. There would also be some practical issues. You and I talked about land. You'd have a lot of capital assets with very low utilization. Mm-hmm. So you've got some practical issues. At the same time, we're on the hook to have manage the system, balance the system, have the spinning reserve, the voltage support, the inertia. We've got to do that. Now, hopefully, over time, we can increasingly do that with carbon-free sources. Mm-hmm. That's why today, having an increment of gas and utilizing our nuclear fleet is really important.
Yeah. So to meet the 100% mm-hmm. carbon-free by 2050, I mean, do you think there are different state and federal policies that need to be in place for you and the rest of the utility industry to meet those kind of goals?
Yeah, so I think the interesting thing for Xcel Energy is we've done what we've done and set a really ambitious course for the company with really no federal policy or mandate. So we've done it with no federal carbon policy. We've done it with no federal climate policy. I think everybody in the room is painfully aware that getting federal energy policy of any sort is challenging at best. But we've been able to do it without it, so no federal RPS, that type of thing. We serve 8 states, and we really believe that working in partnership with the states, whether that's at the policy level or the regulatory level, that really does offer you the best path to do what's right for the state. And we serve some very green states, and we think that's the best way to go. Now, where could policy help? I said we were going to need a technology assist
right.
On things that need to become more commercially viable, more economic. I'd love to see the federal government incent policy that advanced R&D or provided incentives. But generally, we think in terms of rewarding and incentivizing is typically much better than mandating or taxing or setting something that often has disproportionate costs that may impact people differently. I don't really have any strong ask from the state of Wisconsin today. Mm-hmm. I would say, if anything, support our nuclear fleet in their interim. It's 24/7 baseload carbon-free energy. We'd like to operate those to end of operational life, but that's coming fast too for us. That's the early 2030s. So we're already planning for life beyond nuclear ourselves. And then if I could ask for anything else, I would argue that when it comes to addressing the climate, utilities can be your best change agents. They can mm-hmm. do things at scale, they can address carbon. Don't underestimate the benefits of a motivated utility. So anything that promotes the ability to pursue that policy, do it at scale, that incents investment, I think is important.
Super. So no big ask from the federal government or the state government necessarily, although looking forward, keep the conversation going. So turning the mirror around and looking at not just Xcel, but the whole energy industry, and we think about 100% carbon free and what you want to do here, and we want to scale up to those kind of levels. Our organization certainly does in Wisconsin. What do we need to do to make that happen as an energy industry here in Wisconsin?
Yeah, so first I'd say the good news is I think the industry is changing. And mm-hmm. I would really see, although I talked about some of our progress going back more than a decade, in some sectors even longer, I do think our peers are changing, and our peers in Wisconsin are as well. So I think the industry is changing. We're accelerating our pace well beyond what we might have thought possible a long time ago. I mean, it's interesting from my perspective. I was in the room when we were trying to set the 30% carbon reduction by 2020. Mm-hmm. We agonized over that, Tyler.
Right.
I mean, it was quite a discussion in trying to figure out, could we really do it? I mean, we're a group of engineers. We're on the hook for that reliability, as we said, the affordability. You know, could we do it? I saw us go through that same thing as we were setting our new goals mm-hmm. and trying to get there. But again, I don't think you should bet on technology on that. I do think it is important for all of us to try to respect economics, to try to lower the cost as much as we can, increase the capacity factors, because again, I think all of our momentum is at risk. No matter how passionate we are about this, I think all of our momentum is at risk if it's if it's unreliable and unaffordable.
Yeah, so tell us about that. I mean, you've got this carbon reduction plan. Mm-hmm. Talk to us about the affordability and the cost effectiveness of meeting this very aggressive plan to get to zero carbon by 2050.
Right. So that's our chart. You can see the progress so far. I guess you got to have really good eyes, but the kind of lighter shade in the middle, the gold, is where we get from here to 2030. And you can see it's a bit of a jagged line because it's not only adding the 4,000 megawatts of wind, we're already at a gig of solar, but there's a lot more. Just in December, by the way, we interconnected our 50,000th solar installation. So we're at a gig of solar, there's more solar in there, there's coal retirements in there. So we got a pretty good line of sight between here and say 2023. For sure, on the new renewables. Mm-hmm. We've got our two major coal retirements coming before 26, so that's what you see in the middle. The line straight past 2030, because again, we've got to figure some of that out. So feel pretty good about that resource mix. As I said, by 2030, it's probably going to be at least 60% renewable energy. Again, that'll be our predominant resource. But again, don't want to bet against technology, Tyler. I mean, If you just look at the math, some of the things we've experienced with the economies, you can pick your metrics, and I know it's an educated audience, but wind, $65 a megawatt hour a decade ago, less than 20 today. Pick your number on solar, 180, 30 now for universal scale solar. Gas going from 90 to 30 has also played a big part of that. That's a big part of our transition too. So we're using gas as a bridge fuel. I'm sure everybody's heard about that. Considerably less carbon emissions. But again, we're gonna have to address the carbon emissions from gas to get to our goal as well. So either one of two things is either gonna have to emerge. Interestingly, we're using more gas in our portfolio, but it's becoming less of a percentage of our portfolio because we're actually operating it less. It's incredibly important for following the load on the intermittent resources. But we'll have to get to one place in gas where we can either have carbon capture with it or manage the carbon or use it a lot less.
Right.
Or we're going to have to find, hopefully, an economic scenario where we'll accelerate the depreciation on those gas assets, retire them early, and still provide benefits to the customer because that's important if something can emerge to replace it.
So are you expecting customers' bills to be dramatically impacted by this plan, or is this kind of part of the economic transition that enables you to meet that lower bills mandate or that high-level strategy that you've got for your company?
Yeah, it's a very good question. So you've heard me say repeatedly, if it's not affordable, it probably doesn't get done or gets done a lot slower, right? So one of the things I think we're very proud of is we've shown that this can be done affordably. Mm-hmm. And I just cited the numbers on the technology advantage, the price, the economics of some of the renewables. But I think we've shown that you can actually do this, and we've shown that you can do it through a number of our programs. Our Steel for Fuel program is our words for basically the fuel savings benefit is worth more than the capital cost we invest in the steel for the wind farms, the solar installations, that type of thing. And again, if you're doing that at a scale, those economics are already presenting themselves today. But we think we can continue on that trajectory. We've continued to hold our bills flat. The average residential customer in our eight states is actually paying less on a total bill basis for their electricity in 2018, or did pay in 2018, than they did in 2013. And I said that's a big objective of ours, to keep those bills flat. And I really think if we're going to stay on the pace that the chart highlights, we're going to have to continue to do that.
We've also talked about reliability, 99.9%. I know a lot of people, we've got a breakout session on battery storage this afternoon. So where is energy storage at? How does that play a role in enabling this and enabling more renewables and still meeting the reliability needs that clearly we've got as a whole economy?
So we're counting on storage to be part of this picture. You've got capabilities increasing and cost decreasing. But we're still in the early stages. There are certainly applications today where storage works well, but we've got to move the discussion from hours of storage to days or weeks of storage. Right. That same study I referenced mm-hmm. earlier from academics and some of our best engineers on the 100% renewable grid would say you've either got to have storage that works, and this is large scale storage, storage that could be weeks or months, mm-hmm. or you're going to likely suffer curtailment even if you overbuild the system like I've right. shared. So storage has to be part of the picture. We've got a number of pilots across the 8 states with different customers and communities on storage pilot projects. We've got some kind of innovative ones we're considering with here in Wisconsin. In fact, we were in with in to meet the new commissioners and our commissioners last week and actually had a discussion on this very topic of trying to pilot some storage technologies, learn from those, mm-hmm. And try to accelerate the pace of exploring the whole storage equation.
Yeah, I know a lot of the storage developers have said it's, whether you call it a pilot or a just get started project, that operating those and trying to understand what the value to the grid can be is right. going to be a really important next step on energy storage. And I've seen a map, and I think it's one of those maps where Wisconsin is white, and like 48 states or 41 states have some kind of utility scale energy right. storage, and we don't yet.
We've got some ideas.
Good. So you've got communities like the city of Eau Claire,
yes.
which has put forward a very ambitious renewable energy right. goal and carbon reduction goal. Mm-hmm. So beyond just electricity usage, but transportation and other things that right. they're addressing. What do you see as the role of the utility in helping these kind of communities achieve those goals? Yes, for energy, which you're working on, or electricity, but then right. beyond.
Yeah, so again, I applaud the goal. I think they're congruent with where we want to go directionally. I think it starts for utilities like us. I think it starts with how can we help? It's always interesting to talk. Eau Claire is our Wisconsin headquarters city. It's always intriguing for me to talk about partnership with the city of Eau Claire. I always feel like we've been a partner for about 120 years. Mm-hmm. Interesting sidebar, you can trace our roots as a company, Xcel Energy, all the way back to the 1870s. We actually started as the Chippewa River Improvement and Log Driving Company. And in an odd sort of way, we were 100% renewable back in those days. But that started right in the Chippewa Valley. And it feels like we've been in partnership with the city of Eau Claire. And obviously, Eau Claire has a special place because it's our headquarters city. And 700 plus of our employees live right in the mm-hmm. Chippewa Valley. But we're actually working with Eau Claire to help them achieve their goals. And we have a number of partnerships. We call them partners in energy. Relationships with communities around the 8 states, and some of those are major communities. But what we try to do is we try to forge and memorialize a formal partnership. And one of the early things that we had the opportunity to do with the city of Eau Claire was we partnered to pursue a grant to actually get some money, some significant money, mm-hmm. well over $100,000, to structure a program, help the city structure a program and be part of that on everything from energy efficiency to fleet management to water treatment, that type of thing, so we can put together a comprehensive package to be part of helping them achieve their goals. I think it's pretty exciting. I've seen it work in other communities. I'd like to get it off to a terrific start in Eau Claire in a really good way, because mm-hmm. I'd like to see that serve as a prototype for other communities we serve in Wisconsin, and obviously getting that off to a good start would be important. So really looking forward to that.
Great. Excellent. I will let people know there are note cards again, so if you we will have time for questions this round. So if you've got a question for Mark, please fill it out on a note card. We've got volunteers that can collect those and bring them up, and we'll have some chance for audience Q&A. So let's talk about that future of technology mm-hmm. that doesn't exist. We talked a little bit about storage. What do you think some of those technologies are that mm-hmm. have to be there to enable you to reach this 2050 goal? And what is Xcel Energy doing to help develop those technologies?
Yes, that's a really good question, because we're going to need them. And we're an investor-owned utility, but we're regulated, so we don't have a big R&D arm.
Right.
Now, we've done a couple of things to try to get around that so we can be more engaged in that space. One thing I can tell you that I'm happy with is we could have never integrated the volumes of wind we do on our system without advancing the science in this country on wind forecasting. Mm-hmm. And we've worked with the National Weather Service, NCAR. We now have meters or monitors on every wind turbine in our system that gives us real-time wind data. So we not only know when the resource is going to be there, but when we can have confidence to back off the rest mm-hmm. of our system. That's a big part of that equation. So we've advanced that science. Other companies are starting to embrace that same science as well. Like any other utility, because we can't necessarily invest regulated customers' money in R&D, can shareholders and do, but not so much the customer side. We do work with our fraternal groups like the Electric Power Research Institute, mm-hmm. things like that. Our chairman, Ben Folk, is going to become chair of the electrical EEI, the Electric okay. Institute. He becomes chair in January. I'm excited about that because I think we can bring our experience to the entire industry.
Right.
It's our industry's largest fraternal industry. I think we can set a tone with that participation. I think we can even guide the industry. I think it's interesting that the Electric Institute actually picked our chairman to lead EEI, which I think we're proud of. The other thing we're doing that's probably really intriguing is we need to promote technology in a big way. So we've actually started what we call the Energy Investment Fund. And it's a $500 million plus mutual fund, if you will, that invests in early stage renewable energy companies, sustainable companies, early stage new technology for generation companies. The portfolio is designed to include about 20 companies. We were one of the four utilities that put that fund together. We've already had some successes, which is always good when you start something like that. But the interesting thing about this fund is not only are we passively investing, hopefully for a bit of a return, in these companies, but we're learning from these companies. Mm-hmm. We have access to their leadership. We have access to their thinking. In some cases, we're using our service territory as a test bed for some of these new technologies, which is pretty exciting to have that type of partnership. Mm-hmm. I should say, since we've started this fund, it's grown to over $500 million. We've invested in 20 companies. We've drawn a number of other utilities from the sector in, including Alliant and MG&E. So some of our peers right here in Wisconsin are part of that investment, part of that fund, and that's all designed to give us not only exposure to those technologies early and some of the best minds in technology, but to spur that technology, and it would be a big success if we can integrate that as we travel toward 2050.
Super. So speaking of new technology, we've got a breakout session this afternoon as well on electric vehicles.
Right.
And we talked about a little bit with policymakers this morning, but at the high level, just to kind of ground everyone, Xcel's leadership and the leadership of many of the developers and installers in this room, the emissions from the electricity power sector have peaked and they're now declining. And depending on how many miles we drive in a year, but generally the transportation emissions carbon-wise have been continuing to creep up. And so now they're equal. The US EPA says about 28% of the nation's carbon emissions come from electricity and about 28% come from transportation. Mm-hmm. Electricity is on a downward trend with all the advancements in renewables. Right. Not so for transportation yet, but electric vehicles, a lot of people are very excited about that. So, and this market could grow fast. Mm-hmm. So what trends are you seeing as a utility? What do you want to do? Can we accelerate this? Is this a flash in the pan or is this the real deal? Talk to us about electric vehicles and how we can work together.
Another good question, Tyler. First, it won't surprise anybody in the room to hear I'm thrilled about the electrification of the transportation business. I think there's a tremendous opportunity for us there, and so we're engaged in that, as you said, and we can talk about that. But one of the reasons we laid out our number one strategic priority to lead the clean energy transition was laid out very broadly and go beyond us was to address things like the transport sector. And I think there's a great opportunity to do that. I mean, if you look today at electricity on a per gallon of gas equivalent, it's around a dollar, mm-hmm. right? And so if you've got a situation where you've got a private solar installation system and you're charging, you may not have any carbon footprint mm-hmm. with that, which is pretty staggering. But even today, If you're on the Xcel Energy system with that 29% renewable, 58% carbon free, and you're plugging your electric vehicle in mm-hmm. for $1 a gallon, you're reducing your carbon footprint for your transportation by over 70%. Mm-hmm. And if we get to that 30% goal, or that 30-30 goal of reducing carbon by 80%, that'll take that same vehicle's carbon footprint to over 95% reduction.
Right.
So, I mean, there's some big opportunity there. I agree with you. In 2018, the electric utilities turned the corner. Emissions were going down. We're no longer the big problem mm-hmm. child. But transportation actually went up, and it mm-hmm. went up for the first time in a while. Some of that's robust economy driven,
right. yeah.
All the trucking and commerce. But the if you really want to make progress on carbon, irregardless of what your goals are on climate, anything around that, your political stance, you've got to crack that transportation mm-hmm. nut. We think we can be a part of that. So in a number of our jurisdictions, we've already started some pretty innovative programs, advisory services for fleet owners, mm-hmm. For communities. We've got some charging pilots. I'm a big believer that if you really want to make this thing, you've got to have in-the-home charging. I see a day when every home is built with a 240 charger right in it. And from my perspective, that probably can happen soon enough. Mm-hmm. But if you really want to get serious about carbon reduction in the environment, you're going to have to crack that transportation nut. I think we can be a big part of that. I think our business sector can be a big part of that. Now, you might think I'm sitting here thinking about, you and I talked about this in the hallway. Great opportunity. We're going to be able to sell so much more electricity. It's going to make our job of keeping it carbon free.
Right.
More challenging.
Yeah.
I don't really see that. All of our customers are becoming more efficient. There's less utilization on both the electric and gas side. Our sales are declining. I really see an opportunity with something like electric vehicles to bring back an increment of sales to kind of even that whole equation out. So I don't see our carbon footprint changing per se for the generation of that renewable energy or that energy. But I do see us being able to make a substantive impact on carbon in the mm-hmm. transportation sector.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. I'll do one more call for questions if people have them. I see a couple out there. If somebody could grab those and bring them up. Last question before we go to the audience.
Yep.
Is that Xcel Energy really has set an example for the utility industry with renewable additions, and of course, this is an industry-leading carbon reduction goal. Talk to us about, you mentioned EEI, Edison right. Electric Institute, and other groups where utilities get together. So what are you really doing? How are you going to get the rest of the utilities to follow you
yeah.
and make this transition kind of nationwide?
So I think we'd be flattered if people did follow. We're trying to set a good example. I think we can do that in terms of what we've done on, certainly maintain system reliability. We've done it so far affordably. So I think it does provide a bit of a good example for others to follow. I think the other thing, though, is that, look, our customers want this. Our communities want this. Our investors are increasingly demanding this. Mm-hmm. And the environment needs it. So there are plenty of compelling reasons to do it. If we can do it while preserving reliability, doing it affordably, and increasing customer satisfaction, pretty confident others will follow along. I mean, our steel for fuel that I referenced earlier, where we're basically taking fuel costs out of renewable energy by installing renewable energy sources, and that savings is greater than the capital cost to invest in universal scale renewables. Others have already started to copy that. In fact, I've seen other utilities actually call it steel for fuel. Mm-hmm. So.
Did you trademark that?
Well, we didn't.
Yeah,
we didn't.
Yeah. See, there's another shareholder business
something
opportunity.
Something we could have done. write that down, Tyler.
Yeah, right.
So hopefully we can set a good example and maybe be so fortunate to make a difference.
Super. I'm going to get some questions. I know we have a lot of folks in the audience that are solar installers, and so maybe just talking about the role of people putting solar on their own home or their own business, how does that play into this utility evolution and meeting your goals?
Yeah, so obviously distributed solar is going to be a big part of trying to achieve what we want to achieve. We'll not only not only do we want to support what customers want to do on the system, but we also want to use distributed resources in our system to enhance our transmission and our distribution system. We think there's some opportunities that can actually help us refresh our system, build out the new system of the future in a more economic way by using distributed utility. So I think there are some real opportunities there for that.
Great. So I think a thumbs up to continuing to promote churches and businesses, homeowners doing solar and helping to contribute to these broader goals.
I think the one thing we want to...
Those are my words, not yours.
Yeah.
I'm using the stage to promote it.
Yeah. I think the one thing we want to make sure that we do in doing that is, again, scale does matter. Mm-hmm. So you want to provide incentives for that so you can get to the goals. But what you want to make sure that you do is you continue to have the economy and these investments and you make the right investments so you don't have non-participants perceiving or actually subsidizing those who are participating. We've introduced some programs in our communities or for our customers that avoid doing that, that have been quite successful. So we've got a Solar Connect community program. It's Wisconsin's largest solar garden program. It's 99.5% subscribed, so it's effectively a fully subscribed three gardens. It is not subsidized. People who are participate in it, like my good friends in the front row, subscribe to it. They pay a small premium. They get the benefit of it, but nobody else is subsidizing that. We're introducing a new product called Renewable Connect. We just got regulatory approval for it in December. I'm really excited about it. This will allow any customer or community that wants to run faster, further faster than we are. Mm-hmm. So we're at 29% today. We're going to 60 quickly. But if we have customers who want to go faster, we've got a product that they can pick the percentage of they want to be renewable, effectively all the way up to 100% renewable,
right,
through this Renewable Connect product. It's flexible. You don't have to, you basically can subscribe to it on a monthly basis or a 5-year subscription, and we'll provide you a greater increment of solar. Everybody in this audience will appreciate this. You can't count that in your goals if you don't get the renewable energy credits, or in our case, retire the RECs. So for us, with our renewable portfolio standard in Wisconsin, it's a little under 13%. It's bigger than everybody else because by the time it got to Wisconsin, we were already exceeding it. Mm-hmm. So they said, well, Xcel, yours is a higher portfolio standard, which was great. But it's down near 13%. Right. We're at 29%. So if you buy any of our renewable energy products, you not only get RECs retired for what's in our base, the 29%, so you can count that in your goals if you're one of our customers or communities. But if you're buying these other products to run further, faster from us, you can count that as well. We'll retire those RECs. Mm-hmm. So that's yours as well. So we're trying to offer customers the ability to do what they want to do with very attractively priced products without having so many of our customers lease, they don't have a roof that works, they've got trees, and they don't have the opportunity to do what they want to do. We want to give them products and services that are convenient, that can do that at scale, that we'll take care of, we'll improve the technology at a price point that helps us make that transition.
So some really good questions from the audience. So one is a sense that there can be out in the world sort of nuclear versus renewables.
Yep.
And, we don't see a lot of the developers are doing wind and solar and now storage, and so you don't see as much. Right. But how can these carbon-free resources and their trade associations nationally and at state levels work together?
Right.
And I know somewhat this is rooted in, historically there was like the base load and the intermittency, and so kind of coal and nuclear tended to hang out together.
Yeah.
And now nuclear is like, well, it's carbon free, so maybe that's okay, but coal's kind of on the way out in some circles, and now renewables are the new best friend of everybody. So how does that dynamic change, and how do industry groups kind of evolve to this future and work together?
Again, I would encourage everybody to work together because the challenge is great enough without it. I mean, everybody's got to pull together. There's a larger goal, and there's plenty of opportunity for everybody if we're successful along the way. So working together is really important. If the question is of the value of nuclear, I think it is really valuable in this transition. We've really worked hard to improve our nuclear fleet economics, tried to invest in our nuclear. It's an important part of our transition, that 24/7 baseload capacity. But as I said, we're looking for a time when it's not going to be there. Mm-hmm. Now, there are a whole bunch of kind of intriguing nuclear technology opportunities out there, micro-nuclear, nuclear on a truck. I've heard all kinds of crazy things, but maybe some of those emerge. Maybe some of those are part of the equation. Again, I think to operate that grid of the future and support everybody who wants the renewables that we have to manage with a degree of reliability, we need something that is going to be a dispatchable, carbon-free resource. Now, we might not need much of it. Mm-hmm. And to get to our goals in 2030, our goal is only to have like 6 million tons of carbon, mm-hmm. to be 80% reduction in carbon. So we're going to need some things like that that are going to be part of that picture. Hopefully some of those things aren't too far off. But again, I would never bet against technology.
Yeah,
I think there's some great opportunities out there. We will find our way.
Going back to electric vehicles, mm-hmm. Described as a dearth of DC fast charging stations on main highways in western Wisconsin, I-94, 5363. What is Xcel doing? And I think maybe what is Xcel doing and what are your recommendations for this industry to get those charging stations in place so people can reliably drive an electric vehicle?
Right. So we actually have some in Eau Claire, but I think we probably got them because we're right in between Chicago and Minneapolis. Which is a bit unfair mm-hmm. in terms of that. But you're right. I think we want to assist, and this is why we've been exploring new products and services around EVs, trying to find a way. And we've not only done this with electric vehicles, but we've done this with compressed natural gas. We have some of the largest CNG fleets with some of our corporate customers mm-hmm. in the nation, right in the Chippewa Valley. But we think working with communities, if they're going to try to pursue their ambitious goals around sustainability or carbon or even renewables, they've got to have a partnership to try to help them get there. They've got to have technical assistance. They've got to have rate design that promotes that, promotes the time of use, the rate incentives to promote it. It's all part of the picture. We've got a lot of pilots, but we're working on trying to get to a position where I'd love to see a day where we can provide more resources to get electric charging stations where communities need them. I'm a big believer, as I said, that in-home charging is where mm-hmm. it needs to be for the convenience, that type of thing. We're working with our regulators now in early stage dialogue of how can we do that? Mm-hmm. I think we're in the best position to do it. I think we're often trusted in that equation, but having the ability to help homeowners or communities pick vendors, pick charging stations, helping them install them, maybe financing them on their bill, I think is all part of the equation that helps make this transition. I said we could benefit from it, but I think there's a way that we can be a part of it where others today are still struggling with mm-hmm. it. I know in Minneapolis, we started a program where, you know, if you walked into a car dealership, a lot of times it seemed like, and I've done this, sounds like you may have too, Tyler, where you walk in, you say, look, I'm interested in electric vehicles, and the guy pulls you to the other corner of the room and starts showing you a combustion engine truck that he knows a lot about or whatever. And there's not a lot of information there. So we've started a partnership with those dealers where we've got our logo and a sign right there that says, call us, mm-hmm. and are trying to turnkey that installation of that charger and getting that on the bill, getting that finance, getting you linked up with mm-hmm. vendors that can support you in that, and actually getting that, making that process efficient, economic, and easy for people mm-hmm. to do. And I think there's an opportunity for utilities to get more engaged in that process.
So a question from what I would take as kind of a local supporter, a local advocate for renewable mm-hmm. energy. And so I'll twist their question a little bit. But how much has municipal clean energy goals, so these municipalities setting these goals, I mean, how big of a driver was that to get Xcel to say, we should just be doing this so we can serve everybody with this mix? And then I think the corollary is, should folks keep doing that? Should folks keep working with their communities to say, let's push and our utilities will deliver?
Right. Well, one of the things I said, one of the big drivers is our customers want it. Mm-hmm. And in fact, in the early days of this transition, we had to do a lot of our wind projects And even the solar garden project we have in Eau Claire was done as a pilot, because we had policymakers and regulators that weren't quite convinced that if we build it, customers would come. And particularly if it was unsubsidized and it had a premium, very small premium, but it was a premium priced product. We had people saying that that would never happen. And we said, well, we got a lot of customers and communities that are telling us it will happen. We're willing to take a chance, but if you need us to structure this as a pilot first to prove that up, we'll do that. And in many respects, I see our solar garden program in Wisconsin like that. It's an evolution to get to what I think is our Renewable Connect product, which we'll be rolling out this spring, which I discussed earlier, that we think will be a very attractive product for customers to subscribe to and utilize. So I think we're on our way.
Great. Well, any final words for our audience before we finish the conversation?
No, it looks like I'm impressed by the attendance. I was looking at who is all in attendance. There are a lot of people in this room that are already Xcel Energy partners that we've worked with, which is terrific. I appreciate that. But I also just plain appreciate the invitation, Tyler, to sit down with you. I know you and I have had an opportunity to share dialogues before. I look forward to doing that in the future. But I appreciate the opportunity to come in and not only sit down and have that dialogue, but also share the Xcel Energy story a little bit too, because I think it's important and to share, and I appreciate the opportunity to share.
Well, we really appreciate you being here. Congratulations on your industry leadership, and we look forward to good things to come. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir.